The theme tonight is there another, going to be another war for oil. As I say, we have three speakers. They won't be speaking very long. And the order in which they're speaking is Stephen Coleman, Richard Eddicott, and then Terry Montgomery will be the third speaker. Then we'll have some announcements, and there will be then full opportunity for questions and discussion. So, without more ado, I'll call on Stephen to start turning up.
Well, Chairman, comrades, friends, 6 months ago, the talk everywhere was of what? To peace. Wherever you looked, whatever newspaper you picked up, whatever television station you switched on, people were telling you that peace had broken out. The Berlin Wall had come down, that was it. End of conflict in Europe. The superpowers had made friends. Barbara was hugging Raisa. They were getting off aeroplanes and smiling at each other and running towards each other like an old film made in America. Nelson Mandela had come out of prison and they'd been told, well, there you are. Peace has come to South Africa. De Klerk started to say that apartheid was going, so there'd be peace in Africa. And then the next thing they were saying was that Iran has made friends with Iraq. The war had come to an end, so there's peace in Iran and Iraq. Peace had broken out everywhere. Peace was on the agenda. You couldn't pick up a newspaper without being told about peace. So much so that they started to talk about what was called the peace dividend. All of the money that the capitalists were going to save, not having to buy bombs, not having to have larger and ever more lethal armies, these were all going to be put to the purpose now of peace. And there was going to be this wonderful dividend, and people were holding meetings up and down the country. Naive people were running meetings, and they were saying, what should we do with the peace dividend? Build a few more hospitals? Build some of those beautiful council estates that workers live on, build some of those wonderful leisure centres that workers are allowed to go to in the evening. What should we do? And then suddenly, out of nowhere, something came along to disrupt all of this peace. Except, of course, it didn't come along out of nowhere. It had been there all along to spoil the tranquility, to end the peace, bring the spectre of the horror of war there once again. And that was, of course, that in all of this talk of peace and unity and tranquility, the one thing that had never gone away was the world capitalist system of production for profit, whereby a minority own and control the means of wealth production and will only allow production to take place if there is a profit in it for them. So capitalism was still there with all the talk of peace and its dividends. And of course, war is endemic to capitalism. You cannot ever run the capitalist system or hope to run the capitalist system without planning in the most devious manner for the next war that is going to come along. Capitalism without war is like trying to run a brothel without venereal disease. You can't do it, it's inevitably there. And so now, we're on the brink of war. I say we're on the brink of war, of course, the Sun and Sky Television, they've already started the war, but most of us are just waiting for it to start. And the world, we're told now, is faced with a major war. And what's that war all about? Well, let me tell you, first of all, what this war is not about. This war is not about the fact that there is an evil dictator who must be beaten. I'm sure you've all switched on your televisions, read in the newspapers about this evil tyrant, Saddam Hussein, and at all costs he must be defeated, because one morning President Bush got out of bed and he said, good Lord, there's an evil dictator somewhere in the world. We had to have known about him. How the hell did he get there? Who could have been supporting him all these years? Quick, I'll get on the phone to my friend Mrs. Thatcher and we'll have to do what we always do when we meet an evil dictator. Go and slay him. Of course, it's not about that. Because, as you know, the people who are now talking about the need to rid the world of dictators have not only supported, but have very often put in place as our own political puppets almost every single one of the tyrants who are dictating over capitalist countries today. So it's not about defending the world from dictators. Neither is this war about the need to defend the sovereignty of Kuwait. This war isn't about this great thing called Little Kuwait. You all remember the First World War and Little Belgium. The world had to defend Little Belgium. It wasn't about the British Empire having to make sure that its interests were looked after. The First World War was really about Little Belgium, they said. And then in the Second World War, you remember, they said it was about the defence of the sovereignty of Poland after Czechoslovakia and then Poland were attacked. Even though, of course, Churchill had said in the middle of the 1930s how much he would admire a man like Hitler if there was ever a threat of socialism coming about, the reality was, according to them, that this was all a fight to defend small countries against big bullies. But of course, be quite clear about it, this war has nothing to do with defending one small country. A country which was itself set up as a puppet state, quite artificial state, by the British capitalist class, created with borders, separating it from other countries, which would make them small enough and easily enough manipulated to control and to make less powerful. And, of course, these countries which profess great and sincere concern for the sovereignty of others didn't think very much when they went in to places like Grenada, when they went into Panama, where they killed 8,000 workers in their invasion, when they went into Nicaragua and supported the Contras, and in the case of Russia and their empire, when they went into Afghanistan. So the nonsense that this is a war about defending a small, innocent country is a complete nonsense. And finally, this war is not about, and I notice Mr. William Waldegrave of the British Foreign Office, so-called, because it's foreign to any of the interests of the working class. Mr. William Waldegrave said on television when he was being interrogated by Mr. Walden on Sunday afternoon, he said, "This is to defend and to return the liberty of Kuwait, because the Kuwaiti people must have their liberties returned." Well, I have to tell you that the Kuwaiti people, the majority of workers who live in Kuwait, aren't even given Kuwaiti citizenship. So much for their own rulers' concern for the Kuwaiti people. The Kuwaiti people of 2 million, out of that number, only 60,000 are even given the vote. No women in Kuwait have the vote. In both Kuwait and in Saudi Arabia, people can be beheaded and have their hands cut off for stealing property. So the talk, the disgusting, obscene hypocrisy of returning the liberty of the Kuwaiti people is a liberty being perpetrated against the intelligence of the workers who are supposed to listen to it. And I would remind you of the words written by Mr. Gada Al-Bahar of the Kuwaiti Bank in the Guardian newspaper on the 6th of September. This is what he says about Kuwaiti liberty. He says, I quote, "Total and immediate democracy would certainly be more of a burden than an advantage to Kuwait. Democracy should not be imposed as a condition for the return of Kuwait's sovereignty. It must be realized that what worked elsewhere will not necessarily work in Kuwait." So much for that concern about the democracy of the Kuwaiti people. What this war is in fact about is the most important commodity that capitalism requires. Industrial capitalism requires oil, it requires the purchase of oil, and this war started not incidentally at the point when one country invaded another, but at the point when one set of capitalists, the Kuwaiti capitalists, brought down the price of oil contrary to the interests of the Iraqi capitalists. It was these falling out amongst themselves. And why did they fall out? There's a very simple economic answer. It is because of the fact that Kuwaiti capitalists have got a large part of their money invested in Western industry. They have $100 billion, £52 billion invested in industry. And what does industry need to be profitable? Cheap oil. So the Kuwaiti capitalists need cheap oil, and the Iraqi capitalists want to keep oil prices high because they don't have these overseas investments to anything like that extent. It is a squalid battle between two sections of the capitalist class, as all wars are. And of course, this war is effectively about maintaining the control of oil by the unelected billionaires who control these parts of the world and who control the oil industry, who own Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of California, who own Shell, and the same capitalists who talk about freedom, who own Shell, and are telling the oil workers in the North Sea that they are not going to be able to have basic safety regulations introduced because it will damage their profits. So much for freedom. So let me say this. This war has nothing whatsoever to do with the interests of the working class. If there is a drop of working class blood spilt in the coming days or weeks or months, it will be spilt in vain, it will be poured out in order to pour oil and to convert it into profits for the capitalist class of the world. It will be workers dying for their bosses. And that is the only position that socialists can take. But I have to conclude by informing you of this, that it is not the only position that those who call themselves socialists have taken. What about a person, I don't know whether he still calls himself a socialist or ever called himself a socialist. I can imagine when he was at his selection meeting for the Labour Party to become an MP in Wales some years ago, he called himself a socialist. Neil Kinnock. What about him? He wanted Parliament to be reconvened during the summer. Why was it? Because he was so eager to get there to say that he agreed with Margaret Thatcher in what she was doing. Well, he couldn't wait until the autumn to tell her. He wanted to make sure that it was done during the summer. The reason for this, of course, is that every time Neil Kinnock has ever stood up in the House of Commons and criticised the government has said, but look, everything you criticise us for, Labour governments did when they were in power. So now the Labour Party has come up with a brand new tactic, which is that they will now say that they agree with the Tory party before they even come to power, and that way maybe people will believe in them. Well, we don't. And then, of course, there are those other fake socialists, the people from the Leninist vanguard who are going to lead us all because they're more enlightened than the rest of us, the Socialist Workers' Party. They have an ingenious position. They're not taken in by the Sun and the television and tell us that we've all got to oppose this Saddam Hussein. No, they are actually much more enlightened than everyone else. They say that you should support Saddam Hussein. And I quote from Socialist Worker, 18th of August, 1990, speaking of Saddam Hussein, they say, he is directly pitted against one of the greatest imperialist offensives since the Vietnam War. In all this, Saddam should have the support of socialists. Socialists must hope that Iraq gives the US a bloody nose. But of course, they won't be giving the US capitalists a bloody nose. It will be American workers, most of whom were too poor and often too stupid to get out of jobs, who are the ones who will be getting the bloody nose and the cold corpses. And finally, I have to tell you that there is even greater stupidity. There was a demonstration held last Saturday at the embankment in London by a group calling themselves the Revolutionary Communist Party, and they have given out a list of slogans that everyone should shout. Now, I'm not passing around the audience and lead the chorus. There are things like Britain out, US out, UN out, imperialism out, out, out. Now, I don't know whether Andrew Lloyd Webber is working with the Revolutionary Communist Party, but it's quite evident that what we have here is something which has descended from any kind of serious political analysis into a kind of dumb chorus. And finally, of course, one should never forget the words of Tony Benn. Because Tony Benn, as ever, has got an extremely radical alternative to all of this war. He says, all of this killing is unacceptable. Unless, of course, it is supported by the United Nations, in which case, you've got to allow it. So, if you're an Iraqi worker, and you see a stealth bomber coming towards you, and it has a United Nations flag on the side of it, you can say, well, that's all right, it seems to be a pretty class-conscious stealth bomber. Tony Benn sends us his regards as we die. And that is a kind of appalling nonsense. Workers have no country, no countries to defend, no wars to fight. We have no blood to spill for them. We have a world to win.